Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with today's arguments before the Supreme Court on the Arizona Immigration Bill, SB 1070. Former Special Policy Counsel for Immigration-Related Matters in the Civil Rights Division of the United States Justice Department, Margaret Hu, joins us. We will discuss the court's apparent inclination to uphold controversial parts of the Arizona law and testimony yesterday before the United States Senate by the author of SB 1070. Then we'll look into what South Sudan sees as a declaration of war by Sudan, with Larko Tongan, a professor of international and intercultural studies at Pitzer College. He was born and raised in the world's newest country, oil-rich South Sudan, already under attack by its northern neighbor. Then finally, as Mitt Romney wraps up the Republican presidential nomination and Newt Gingrich finally drops out of the race, we will discuss the Romney campaign's pivot to the center and its themes of restoring American greatness at home and abroad. Ben Adler, who covers conservative politics and the media at The Nation, joins us. He has an article at The Nation, "Did Romney Buy the GOP Nomination?" Joining us now is Margaret Hu. She's a visiting professor at Duke Law School, where she is a senior lecturing fellow in Duke's program in public law. Her research includes the intersection of immigration policy, national security, and civil rights. She previously served as senior policy advisor for the White House Initiative on Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, and also served as special policy counsel in the Office of Special Counsel for Immigration-Related Unfair Employment Practices in the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice. As Special Policy Counsel, Margaret Hu managed a team of attorneys and investigators in the enforcement of the anti-discrimination provisions of the Immigration and Nationality Act and was responsible for federal immigration policy review and coordination for the OSC. Welcome to Background Briefing, Margaret Hu.
Thank you for inviting me.
And it looked today, as much as one reads these tea leaves before the Supreme Court arguments with all the caveats involved, that the justices seemed somewhat sympathetic to the core part of the Arizona law that the federal government is striking down. In fact, Justice Sonia Sotomayor said to the Solicitor General, making the arguments on behalf of the government, "You can see it's not selling very well. Why don't you try to come up with something else?" I would think for a lawyer that's a bit humiliating, isn't it?
It certainly is not a good day when you have a justice of the Supreme Court saying such a thing. But so, I think that it's very dangerous to try to read too much into the tea leaves. I think what we saw today is that determining who is unlawfully present in the United States is a very complex process. And even though it did seem that some of the justices were sympathetic to what Arizona is trying to do, especially the Arizona argument that all they're trying to do is assist the federal government in its immigration enforcement effort, I think that some of the questions showed that sometimes you might have a situation where, you know, what if you detain a U.S. citizen? What is the process in which, you know, somebody's been wrongfully detained, and how are they going to show that they actually are lawfully present in the United States? How long will they be detained, and what are the constitutional violations that might flow from that? So I think that there were just a lot of very complex issues before the court today, and it's too soon to say exactly how they're going to rule.
Well, in terms of that argument, it seems that Chief Justice Roberts was sympathetic. It says, "It seems to me that the federal government just doesn't want to know who is here illegally or not." And Justice Scalia said, so in response to the answer from the Solicitor General, "So we have to enforce our laws in a manner that will please Mexico?"
I think that that has been one of Arizona's main arguments here, that the federal government is not enforcing federal immigration law in a way that's effective. And a lot of people say that our immigration system is broken. And so Arizona sent a message to the federal government with SB 1070 and with other immigration-related laws that they've been passing or attempting to pass. And that message is, get out of our way because we can do immigration law better than you can do immigration law at the federal government. But I think that it's going to be very problematic for the Supreme Court because for well over 100 years, this Supreme Court has said that regulating immigration is exclusively within the federal government's sole prerogative power and that it is fully within the national prerogative to be able to control that policy. So it will certainly open the floodgates to states having a role in determining immigration policy if the Supreme Court decides to uphold SB 1070.
Well, it's the argument, of course, is under the Supremacy Clause, right? So in as much as the government should be setting immigration policy, it also has the right to create a national currency. I mean, that seems fundamental. It seems historically based. Surely that's the kind of anchor here, isn't it, for the government's case?
It is the anchor for the government's case. And so primarily what you heard in oral argument today was this idea of the Supremacy Clause, that the laws of the federal government are supreme in this land under our Constitution, and that state laws such as this should be preempted. And so that's what the Solicitor General was arguing before the Supreme Court today. But I think that what's happened is immigration policy and law has become very, I think, difficult to navigate what is truly national and what is truly local, because the federal government itself, in the past decade, especially since September 11th, has encouraged states to participate in immigration enforcement and in national security activities. And so that's, I think, what you saw before the congressional hearing yesterday, that Senator Schumer, what he was discussing that issue with Russell Pierce, who was the main sponsor of SB 1070 in Arizona, where Russell Pierce was saying, after 9/11, basically this is a national security issue where you need the assistance of state and local law enforcement to help out. And why would you protest that? What's objectionable about that? And that puts the federal government in a really tough position.
So what was in the case of the arguments yesterday before the Senate Judiciary Committee on Immigration, chaired by Chuck Schumer, when Russell Pierce was in the hot seat, what was Senator Schumer's response to that?
Well, I think that Senator Schumer's response is that we can't have a uniform, coherent immigration policy when you have all 50 states implementing their own laws. And I think that it's important to understand how historically unprecedented the situation we're in right now is, because since Congress failed to pass comprehensive immigration reform legislation in 2006-2007, there have been considered in state and local governments over 7,000 immigration-related proposals. And last year alone, by the end of December 2011, 42 states in Puerto Rico had enacted 197 new laws, 109 new resolutions dealing with immigration. And in the first quarter of 2011, there were over 1,500 immigration-related bills and resolutions that were considered in all 50 states and also in Puerto Rico. So this has never been seen before in the history of the United States. We've never seen this tidal wave of state and local governments basically trying to engage in a hostile takeover of federal immigration law and policy. And so what you saw yesterday in Senator Schumer's hearing is his declaration that we have to put an end to this, and that if the Supreme Court decides to uphold SB 1070, we're going to write legislation to strike it down.
Well, of course, the point you're making here, Margaret Hu, again, visiting professor at Duke Law School, she served as a special policy counsel in the Office of Special Counsel for Immigration-Related Matters in the Civil Rights Division of the United States Department of Justice. Clearly, what the states are arguing is that they're filling a vacuum created by the federal government's inactivity and the inability to pass comprehensive immigration reform, and already the very law, the Arizona law that's before the Supreme Court today, SB 1070, similar laws have passed in Alabama, Georgia, Indiana, South Carolina, and Utah. But in terms of the federal government striking back, it's the three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals in the Ninth Circuit in San Francisco that have blocked four provisions of the law, and that's led to this Supreme Court. That's the background, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, there are four provisions that were considered before the Supreme Court today, and whether or not the Supreme Court will be upholding that injunction against those four provisions, or whether or not those four provisions are going to be considered unconstitutional as preempted under the Supremacy Clause. And I don't know whether it'd be useful to walk through some of those provisions just to give
I think it would be
listeners. Okay, great. Background. Well, there the four provisions that were being considered by the Supreme Court today was Section 2B, which requires law enforcement to verify the immigration status of anyone that they have reasonable suspicion to be unlawfully present in the United States. And then there was Section 3, which would make it a crime under Arizona law as well as federal law to fail to carry an alien registration document. There's Section 5C that would make it a crime for an undocumented worker to seek employment in the state, and Section 6, which would allow the police and local law enforcement to make arrests without a warrant. So those were the four provisions that were under consideration today. And reviewing the argument, it did seem like there might be more sympathy for the two provisions that were not criminalizing behaviors, and perhaps less sympathy for the criminalization of a failure to carry an alien registration document, as well as the criminalizing of employment, seeking employment if you were an undocumented worker.
Well, the former, of course, has led to the critics of the Arizona law suggesting that Arizona has become the show me your papers state, you know, with a obvious echoing the kind of SS Nazi officer, show me your papers.
Yeah, it's definitely been criticized, SB 1070 and SB 1070 copycat laws that are now being enacted across the United States as being show me your papers laws or your papers please laws. And I think it's very interesting to think about the consequences of these types of laws. As far as the history of even that phrase, that it was actually, in my understanding of the development and genesis of that phrase, a United States citizen who went abroad to help his relatives in Nazi-occupied Austria, and when he came back, he decided to write a play about the persecution of the Jews that he saw, and that play then became the screenplay that became Casablanca. And so I think that, you know, given that there's a real cultural resonance here of what is acceptable and what is not acceptable, and the opening lines of Casablanca start with, you know, may we see your papers, and what that author was trying to do was to say this is antithetical to American values. I think that's a very important part of the narrative here. It's not a part of the legal issue necessarily before the Supreme Court, but it is a part of the cultural protest.
And I should say, Margaret Hu, again, visiting professor at Duke Law School. She's also served as a special policy counsel in the Office of Special Counsel for Immigration-Related Matters at the Civil Rights Division of the United States Department of Justice. I think, Margaret, surely this is also a political issue here in this election year. It seems that some pundits say that the Republicans have done damage to their image with Latinos and have to shore it up and improve it and perhaps put Marco Rubio on the ticket with Mitt Romney. There's the accusations that the Democrats are milking it as well. It would seem to me the real question would then be, is there enough Latino voters in this country to be motivated to cancel out the kind of xenophobic appeal that the Russell Pierces of this world have on the conservative side? How would you, I know it's not a question for your in your legal purview, but I'm just curious to know the size of the constituencies.
Well, I certainly think that this is a very political issue, and I think that part of what's very difficult about this case and what we saw before the Supreme Court today is that the legal issue before the Supreme Court was really a preemption one, as you pointed out, whether or not this law violates the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution. Should the federal law be supreme over this state law? And yet, a lot of the protest is around this show me your papers aspect of the law, the racial profiling aspect of the law. So it's been criticized as a racial profiling law. It's been criticized as a show me your papers law. And during oral argument, the Solicitor General did try to bring up the issue of the problem of harassment, quote unquote. And he did raise that Arizona has 2 million Latinos. And he said only 400,000 are there unlawfully. And so he signaled his fear that you're going to have massive racial profiling of the rest of the Latinos there that are there lawfully and are U.S. citizens. But yet, this case is not before the Supreme Court right now challenging whether or not it's a violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. And so even though there's a lot of political firestorm about, you know, how this law has racial implications, the racial discrimination aspects of this law, they're proceeding under a separate litigation. It's not under this litigation that was before the Supreme Court today.
So that's why the Chief Justice, John Roberts, said to the Solicitor General, Mr. Verrilli, he said, no part of your argument has to do with racial or ethnic profiling, does it? To which Mr. Verrilli agreed. So they've agreed that they're separating this out, right?
Yeah, I think that there is this real attempt to try to depoliticize it and try to minimize sort of the very tough racial issues here. But I think what's very difficult is how do you separate those issues out? And sometimes the law is just very imprecise that way. So, you know, right now you have a case before the Supreme Court that the cultural protests surrounds the types of issues we've talked about, the racial profiling, the show me your papers. Is this anti-American? Is this sort of antithetical to American values to have to carry around your papers 24/7 and show them to law enforcement on demand? And yet, what is the specific issue before the Supreme Court? And it really is a preemption issue right now. But I think that what's going to happen is because we have so many of these laws, hundreds now reaching into the thousands being considered and passed, that the litigation is going to continue, and it's going to continue for many, many years. And we're going to see whether or not the other litigation against SB 1070 and some of these other laws that are challenging these laws under the Fourth Amendment, under the Due Process Clause, under equal protection, whether or not they will now start to, you know, gain footing in other, you know, other legal venues.
So do you think, Margaret, who that the previous case before the Supreme Court involving the Arizona law, Chamber of Commerce versus Whiting, which split 5-3 along ideological lines, is that a precursor to this one? I mean, you know, you can't, as much as we were saying earlier, you can't, you know, it's pointless reading the tea leaves. It's like studying Soviet Union's Politburo during the Cold War. But on the other hand, this Supreme Court has pulled some surprises, and nobody's entirely sure that they won't strike down Obama's health care reform. So what do you think of that precedent? Does that say anything?
Yeah, I think it's actually very instructive because it was cited by Arizona in support of its position that this law, SB 1070, is not preempted. So why don't, for your listeners, let me back up and explain a little bit about Chamber of Commerce v. Whiting that was decided by the Supreme Court last term. So this is a case that involved Legal Arizona Workers Act that was passed in 2007. And under the Legal Arizona Workers Act, it required all of the employers in Arizona to sign on to E-Verify. E-Verify is an internet-based identity management technology. It's highly experimental. And what it requires is that an employer at the time of hire gather personally identifiable information from an employee, run it through government databases over the internet, and through complex statistical algorithms, technically, the program is supposed to be able to tell an employer whether that employee is lawfully present and able to work in the United States. But what often happens is that the databases are rife with errors, or maybe the employer enters information wrong into the system. You know, women are more susceptible to erroneous results due to name changes from marriage and divorce. And independent studies that have looked at this program have determined that it's just largely inefficacious. It just doesn't work. And yet, Arizona mandated this database screening protocol for all employers. And the Supreme Court in Whiting upheld this law and said that you can go ahead and require this mandatory immigration screening database protocol for all employers, even though Congress had said that it was not supposed to be mandated, that it was experimental, that it was under testing. But I think the important part about the Whiting case was the Whiting court said that because the state law in the Legal Arizona Workers Act was basically a perfect mirror of federal immigration law, that there was no preemption, that you could have the federal government and the state government work in perfect harmony and cooperation in immigration enforcement. And so when Arizona decided to defend SB 1070 and petition the Supreme Court and said, please overturn the Ninth Circuit and their injunction of those certain provisions of SB 1070, they said, look at Whiting. In your decision in Whiting, you said that as long as we were a perfect mirror of federal immigration law and policy, there would be no problem with preemption. So if the Supreme Court decides to follow its line of reasoning in the legal Arizona Workers Act, then it really could be a situation where the Supreme Court decides that there's no preemption here.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Margaret Hu.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Margaret Hu, a visiting professor at Duke Law School, where she's a senior lecturing fellow in Duke's program in public law. She also served as a special policy counsel in the Office of Special Counsel for Immigration-Related Matters in the Civil Rights Division of the United States Department of Justice. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with a South Sudanese about the war against his country by the North.
Time to send someone away. Got my back covered. Said, how you been all led astray? Come, let's count. It's absurd.